Welcome to the Drama Dialogues, Life and Relationships Unraveled. I'm Jenny and I'm here to empower you on an exhilarating journey. Together we'll navigate the twists and turns of everyday dramas with practical tips and engaging stories so you can have a powerful day every day. Get ready to embrace healthier relationships, effective communication and personal growth. Join me as we unravel the mysteries of life's dramas and share a few laughs along the way. Get ready to ditch the chaos and embrace the magic. This is the Drama Dialogues. Happy New Year, everybody. This is my first guest of the year, and it's very exciting to introduce Kelly Forbes to you. Kelly Forbes runs Aru Collective, where luxury meets purpose, and she is all about reframing how we plan our journeys and prioritize people, the planet, and innovative solutions. And this is all about luxury travel. So it is January. I don't know about you, but we're surrounded by flooding. Kelly is surrounded by snow down in Oxford. And I think we're all probably thinking, oh, when is the holiday coming? So we're going to dig into that today about holidays and travel and all the drama that comes with it. Welcome to the show, Kelly. It's lovely to have you here.
Jenny, thank you so much for having me. It's a delight to see you again.
So you're one of the favorite things I love about the podcast is sometimes I get a message from people and it wasn't from you. It was from somebody that I know that knows you and said, oh, I've got this really amazing person. It'd be a really good guest. And then we had a chat, didn't we? A half an hour chat that ended up being an hour because we, as usual, hit it off, got on like a house on fire, and had loads of stuff in common. So it's going to be a brilliant episode today. I know that. But first, tell us a bit about yourself. Like, what got you into travel in the first place?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, honestly, I did not know what I wanted to do with my life. You know, at the age of 16, I remember in those days seeing a career advisor and going, I don't know what I want to do. No clue. And they said, oh, well, you're quite good at languages. Why not look into travel? So I thought, oh, that's a good idea. So at that point, after doing GCSEs, I decided to go to college and study travel and tourism at college. And I really loved the course. It took me a while to get into it because it was obviously very different from being a student where you kind of spoon-fed information to start taking your own initiative. But really loved being at college, and at that point thought, oh, I think I might like to be an air hostess. But me being me, I didn't want to go and work for kind of like the no frills airlines, I guess, at the time. I wanted to work for Virgin or British Airways or, you know, one of those guys. But you had to be 21 to work for them. Yeah. So leaving college at 18, thought, okay, I'll go and get some experience, because what I knew was I didn't at that point want to go to university, because I wasn't 100% sure that I wanted to go into travel. And at the time, when looking at the degrees in travel, tourism, hospitality, I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to come out with a lot of debt and not actually know if that is what I want to do at that time. And also going into industry, you still start off at the same level, whether you've got a degree or not, because it's not really, certainly the roles that I was going into, you didn't need a degree to go into the roles that I was going into. So I thought, I'll just go and get some experience. So I was quite lucky. I came out with a great grade at uni, at college, and student of the year kind of awards as well, which was lovely.
And the great thing about that, the student of the year, is you weren't particularly massively academic at school. You didn't really fit in at school, you felt.
Yeah, I mean, I did okay at school. I was always kind of A to C student. So like when my careers advisor said, oh, you're quite good at languages, I mean, I was a grade B student. I was definitely not the A. So I always did okay. I got through, I did fine in GCSEs. But being at school, for me, yes, I showed up every day and I enjoyed being at school. But I don't like exams. I really struggle. I get petrified, had a lot of anxiety when it comes to exams. And I get a bit of almost like a stage fright. Sat going to sit in a big hall with all of these other students and the pressure within to create something within that 90 minutes that you're sat there, what I found terrifying. And I remember thinking, I failed everything. And I wouldn't even go into school to collect my GCSE results because I thought my friends will have passed everything and I'll have failed. So I had them posted to me. That's how terrified I was. And as it turned out, I had nothing to be terrified about. They were absolutely fine. It was enough to go on to do whatever it was that I wanted to do, whether it was A levels or college. So school for me was difficult, because I don't think I just fitted the mold in terms of those exam, the way the exams are held. I'm more a kind of learn and apply. I like that. I do well with coursework. Anything that I can chip away at and take a moment to pause and keep coming back to, that's me, really. To get student of the year was quite something. I wasn't expecting it. I think I just found my way, found something that I enjoyed, found something that I was good at. In those days we didn't really have computers. I remember we get Like my stepdad came home with a secondhand computer, and I learned to type my assignments out instead of handwriting the assignments out, and starting to learn different technologies. And it's in the days where the original Nokias just came out, so it's very different times. So it was quite a big deal, I think, to get in those days to get student of the year, and that opened up the doors actually for me to get my next job. So I applied to three travel agents, and where I was living at the time with my family, it was I was surrounded by quite a few affluent villages, all with their independent travel agents. Coincidentally, the one that I applied for had won several awards as best travel agent of the year, going for an interview, meeting the MD there, and really liked him, and he was taking on an office junior, essentially, him and his wife. So I went and worked started this job at Carrier, which is a travel agents in Alderley Edge, that was also a tour operator. And so I worked and kind of built my way up in the company essentially and traveled the world with them. I remember my first trip, bearing in mind my holidays were usually to a caravan in Wales, with family. I think the furthest place I'd flown to was Jersey. It was a very different background, experience to my background.
Which is really interesting given that, you decide to go into travel, but you've not really traveled yourself.
That's right. Yeah, I
Were
just
you
got the love for
interested in
it.
the idea of traveling and just hadn't done it? Or,
Yeah.
yeah.
Like I had itchy feet. I was desperate to see the world. I had no idea what was out there. So finding this job, like it felt like luck, but I know obviously there was some hard work behind the scene that got me into the role in the first place. But I remember the first trips that I went, first 4 years of working there, the age of 18, never flew economy. We always flew business class because we got upgraded by all of the airlines, because it's a credible brand. So they wanted that, they want to impress you. And I was flying to Dubai, flying to Barbados, staying at Sandy Lane in Barbados. I mean, literally, this led this jet setter
Sounds
lifestyle.
like a dream.
It really honestly was. And essentially, what they would do is send their staff out on these amazing trips across the world, and then you would come back and then promote the destination and promote the properties to the customers. So you're being very honest with your experience, because I'm not a kind of person that can sell ice to Eskimos. I'm very honest and transparent. So by going to these destinations, I could give this first-hand experience to my customers. And that's how you built up that customer base, really. A lot of trust going into those
And
relationships.
how long ago was this? Like, what sort of year we are we talking about?
Wowzers. So 2000?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2000 this was.
And back then, that was, I think, quite a different approach to travel from what I can gather. Like,
Yeah.
what I'm trying to get at is I want the listeners to really sort of embrace the fact that actually, back in 2000, this wasn't a normal thing. But you weren't special. I mean, you obviously were. You worked really hard. Everybody's special. I'm not saying that,
Yeah.
but you weren't. It's not like you had parents that introduced you to this thing and this lifestyle. You just literally applied for a job. And in applying for that job, the people within that job were a brilliant management team, from what I can gather,
They were
and
amazing.
really looked
Yeah,
after you. So there
they
was nothing
did.
special about this. It just shows that there is possibility out there, even though that was 24 years ago. Those things are still happening now, and probably even more so in some respects.
Yeah, I think for me, I remember my parents would say to me, you know, if we had like a Christmas party at work, my mum would always say to me, always make sure you buy the owner at the time, different owners now, but the owner at the time, a drink and to say thank you at the bar, because my mum was always about giving back one way or the other, even when you don't have very much yourself. And so she was very much like, even though I was on kind of minimum wage back then, it was important for me to go and buy the couple, the owners, a drink at Christmas time just to say thank you. Even though I was the lowest paid member of staff, at that time, at the party. But for me, it was kind of to say, I appreciate this opportunity, thank you. And even if it is just a drink, at least when the bar was opened up later on and it was free drinks, at least I'd kind of felt like I'd done, made a
Yeah,
point to
then you were
say thank
building
you.
relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that went a long way because they really trusted me. They, like I say, they took me everywhere with them and they were very kind. They didn't expect. Sometimes we were having big meetings, with general managers and direct sales and marketing and, the team on property, about rate negotiations and room allocations. But they were very kind to me. They let me sit in those meetings. They all said it was important to sit in, but don't worry about contributing. It's okay. Just learn from it.
How did
And I
that
really did.
feel as a quite a shy 18-year-old? Because
Tired.
you
I
did lack
was. It,
confidence.
well, I think it helped that because the owners, Ian and Carol, they were so lovely with me. They were like my work parents, and really took me under their wing. They taught me so much. And I think that really helped because if I'd gone into, say, a meeting with perhaps other, say, senior members of staff, they may have been expecting me to contribute more. But actually, they gave me this kind of, get out card, I guess, by introducing me as Kelly is new, she's our junior, and we want her to learn, from these opportunities. So I think that made a huge difference to me, and made me feel very comfortable in myself because I'm not expecting to give something back or give wrong information back. Because I didn't have all of those figures, they took figures into those situations that I wasn't privy to, even though they were comfortable to have me, there in the meetings. So it was a special time, and I learned so much. I embraced that opportunity, just keep learning, 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 and like I say, all they took me everywhere, all over the world: New Zealand, Maldives, Mauritius, Seychelles, all of these private islands. Because they knew when I came back that I could be genuine and help my customers make the right choice. Because what I recognize now is whilst there's a lot of money out there, what people don't have these days is time. So when they're going on holiday, it is still an investment. And whilst they can afford that kind of money, they still want to make the right choice. So they want to go to the right destination. that is right for you know, whether they're a couple or an individual or a family. We want to make the right choice. So it's an investment in their time as well as the, you know, the financial
Yeah,
side.
absolutely. How did it feel as an 18-year-old sat in those rooms with all these managing directors and people?
Daunting, completely daunting. And I felt very small. Not that my team might made me feel
No.
small, but actually realizing I've got a lot to learn. You know, it's all very well and good traveling around the world and having these opportunities, but if I want to progress in my career, I recognize it was a privilege. I recognize these are the conversations that I am going to have as, you know, as I start moving up and evolving into various other roles, which, and it did help because I did go on later on in my career to become a director of sales for hotel groups. So I was able to see both sides of the coin. I knew what they wanted from me, and obviously I knew what the hotel group needed in return, and where to balance that out in the middle. So yes, I felt privileged. So whilst it was quite intimidating, I did feel privileged to have those opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of similar kind of experiences from a very young age being thrown into boardrooms with directors and people. And I loved it. Like, I really enjoyed it. As you've said, I enjoyed the people watching and the, oh, this is how it all goes on. And I loved that aspect of things and was lucky to be exposed to that from a very young age. But lots of people out there, lots of young people aren't anymore. And I think that trust is massive. So many people dream of starting a business, but they kind of go, oh, I'm not the right age, it's not the right time, or it's not this, or it's not like there's loads of excuses. But you dove in the most bizarre timing a bit later in life. And so tell me how you overcome all those mindset challenges of it's not the right time and stuff, and tell everybody what you did.
Well, so I had an idea. It started off with just a niggle in my head of frustrations that I'd had in the industry, and started thinking about the sustainable side to travel. So I guess what I After I'd done my time at Carrier, various roles, I worked there for 8 years all in all. And then I went actually traveling for a couple of years, backpacking, which was an incredible experience. And I learned so much from 2 years out. I was on my own. I had my best friend with me for some of the time, and then I traveled the rest of the world for the 2 years on by myself. And I learned so much about a destination, and that's the other side, actually. Sorry, I'm just kind of backtracking
That's
a bit
okay.
here. When you travel in luxury, you don't actually really get to see a destination. You see the nice polished bits of a destination, because you can afford to have the private transfers, the private lounges, the exclusive VIP sections. So you're not really seeing a country, what it's really about. And so for those 2 years, I mean, I think I took four flights in 2 years across three continents. So the rest of it, I did it all by land because I didn't have money, but I had time. So I could do it as slow as I wanted and as economical as possible. So that was quite incredible. And that stuck in my mind actually as before, thinking about starting my business. But I then went on to work for hotel groups. When I came back from traveling, moved to London, started set up, I didn't hadn't weirdly, I traveled all around the world but not been to London. So just moved to
That's
London.
hilarious.
I think I came back on like the 23rd of December, just in time for Christmas, and said to my family, yeah, I think I'm going to go and start working for hotels now, which will mean go and move to London, go and get a job in London. So my parents were distraught. I think they thought I was going to come home and settle down and,
Yep.
and maybe, go back to what I was doing before. But I knew that wasn't for me. It was wanting to work in hotel sales. So I did that for another decade or so, I think. And it was actually, I must be honest and say, it was actually the last role that I held that changed my mindset and really helped, because I always knew that I wanted to have my own business. I just didn't know what I wanted that business to be. I knew it was going to be somehow in the travel industry. But a few people said, "Oh, start my own representation company, you're having my own sales portfolio, working for hotel groups and promoting them." But as much as I enjoyed the role, I knew that wasn't what I wanted my own business to be. So I worked for an amazing company here in Oxfordshire. I'd had my first baby and wanted to not work in London, not commute to Oxford from Oxford anymore, and didn't want to work full time, wanted to enjoy having a child. So I found a local role here in Oxford as working for a representation company. They did sales and they did PR. So I headed up the sales team, and I love working for them because it was the first company since actually in my early days of career where I really felt the difference in culture. So I think sometimes we can be chasing the job title and the salary and so on and so forth. But it doesn't always make you happy. Like when you're working with these people, you have to really enjoy what you're doing. And sometimes in sales, I felt, yes, you were compensated financially, but I don't know, they don't always necessarily care for you. And so working for this company here in Oxford, I felt cared for. Felt like this is the first time in a long time that someone has really thought about my well-being. The owner had children as well, which made a huge difference because they understood that children get sick, and you can't, you have to go and take them out of nursery. But so I worked there, and that agency became a B Corp certified agency as well, and that made a huge difference because I could tell the clients that we were working with were very much in similar mindset. They were hotel like smaller hotel groups that cared essentially and were doing good. And this is what was quite interesting. This was a turning point for me because I worked at Lemongrass Marketing as a representation agency, and one of my clients within that was a brand called And Beyond. And And Beyond were a kind of conservation-led luxury lodge product. And for the first time, I remember reading an impact report that they had produced, and it blew my mind as to how good it was because with luxury, it feels like there's consumption. It's consuming, it's opulence, and there's a lot to it. Just pure consumerism, consumption. And for the first time, I'd worked for a company that was actually more about giving back. So they did this amazing work across mainly across Africa, but also South America and Asia as well. And it was all conservation led. It was all community focused. And what I realized now is I was going out to tell trade partners, a bit like I was at the very beginning. People come in and tell me all about their properties. I go and see them, and they would talk about how many rooms, how many pools, the children's club, blah, blah, blah. And the way that I used to kind of promote And Beyond, if you like, was talk about the good work that they did first. And what I was finding was kept coming down to, they were really interested in the work that And Beyond were doing, but it kept coming down to these ticks, tick boxing. And it was driving me potty because I would see, they would give me a green tick or a green leaf or something to say, oh, this is an eco or sustainable kind of product, if you like. And then I would see the other hotel groups were getting these same ticks and same green leaves. And I was thinking, they're not doing half as much as what Ambient were doing. And they get the same recognition, if you like, if that's what you want to call it. And I was like, this isn't right. And it made me realize that the bar for sustainability was extremely low.
No, yeah.
Remove some plastic straws and you'll get a green tick somewhere, you know? And I was like, this can't be right. And I thought, but I could see all this conservation work taking place. And that's when my mind started ticking, thinking, where is the brand that is championing these sustainable hotels? Because I knew there were some out there from my own experience of working back at Carrier, of seeing these incredible brand hotels. Most were independent hotels, actually. So I thought they are out there, but there are some great specialist companies in the UK, but kind of not one that exclusively promoted just sustainable luxury product, essentially. So yeah, my mind was going mad. And I noticed as well, like my own challenges when it came to booking travel was, so say for example, I would go to an online booking provider for a hotel. Or say my husband did. My husband's very good at booking little weekend breaks away, you know, for the two of us to get some time together. And he booked lovely hotels. But when we got there, we were just another guest, as in they didn't have any information on us. They didn't know that I would have loved to have booked a spa treatment. But because we were checking in, there was no room left at the spa. The spa's already pre-booked, or you know, if you want a place in the children's club, you know, these are the things that you kind of need to pre-book. And my husband, as wonderful as he is, like once he'd made the booking, that was it then. You know, he'd done his bit, kind of thing. So he wouldn't think to book those services that the hotel could provide to enhance the stay. So I started kind of pulling all this together, thinking, well, we know that when you book online, often we have challenges. I'm sure, Jenny, you've had experiences as well where
Oh, yes.
not getting through to someone, you think you've paid all this money. Why isn't, you know, if you've got a query, a question, you want to change a date or something, why is no one coming back to me? How do I do this? How do I get the help that I need? So then, yeah, all of these pieces start to come together. And I was thinking, well, where is the platform? Where is the online platform? Because I don't know if you're like me, but I tend to book holidays at around 11 o'clock at night because I don't have time in the working day to do anything.
I am
And me,
definitely not up at 11 o'clock at night.
but me and my husband, by the time you've got the children down to bed and had dinner and thought, okay, we've got some time together now, let's sort something out, that's usually an unsociable hour. And we want instant gratification of making this booking. So I thought there must be more people like that like, you know, nice hotels. They, you know, want to book at a time that's convenient to them, but get frustrated with poor customer service. So yeah, so my mum's going mad. But so they had these ideas whirring around in my head, but I didn't have the confidence to go out and do it initially. So this at the time was when COVID had hit. So early 2020, I gave birth to our second child the end of February, and then we went into the first lockdown in March. And I had complete anxiety because obviously I had colleagues all around the world and fearful for everyone, and realized actually how fortunate we were in the UK in comparison to a lot of other countries, and really struggled with that. I was up at all hours, you know, obviously feeding babies and looking after toddlers and so on. But my mind was racing, and so I had kind of had this idea, and I thought, oh, I know, I'll go to university. The
As you do.
As you do. I mean, the travel industry was on its knees. So I was thinking, obviously at that time, we didn't know what that meant. We didn't know how long we were going to be in lockdown for. I thought, well, this is not the right time to start a company right now. No one's actually traveling anywhere. So I thought, okay, go to uni, go and educate yourself, go and build that confidence, go and, take those ideas that I've got and put them through the mill at uni. So that's what I did. So I was mad. I started at Oxford Brookes. So Teddy, I think, was 4 months old by that point, and Ollie was a toddler. And yeah, I just found myself in the September. There I was in a classroom, with a couple of hundred
Was it
students.
online?
Well, no, actually, it was just as we'd opened up. So we went in for the first semester. Semester two was online, but semester one was in person. Obviously, everyone was face masks and
Yeah.
social distancing and so on and so forth. And really enjoying being there. There was a lot of anxiety, of course, because there's a lot of 18-year-olds that were leaving home for the first time, and going into a, I think it's hard anyway, leaving home and going to uni, but going into an environment where of the unknown, I think was quite tough.
Yeah.
And I have complete respect for all of those 18-year-olds that managed to get through that.
I don't believe it's a great time to go to university when you're 18. I really don't. I think we're not ready as humans generally. Like some are, and others just aren't ready. And I think waiting until you're a bit older is so much more beneficial for how much you learn, the impact of your learning. I did a degree at 18. I hated it. I've never done anything with my degree. It was 4 years.
What did
I've
you do at
got a
18?
fashion degree.
Did
Yeah.
you?
I went to art college in Edinburgh and did a fashion degree and really did not like it. And I just think I was just too young to appreciate what I wanted, what I needed. So what I really want the listeners to cue into is all those excuses they're coming up with in their minds as to why they can't do a degree because they're over 30, or they've got kids, or they've got this, or they've got that. There is never a right time apart
Never.
from when you make the decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an investment, because obviously, yes, you've got the financial investment, but your time and also the family situation, that's a huge juggle. And I can't lie, like whilst obviously children were my priority, I did not on purpose, but my poor husband kind of went to the back of the queue, to the back of the line for any attention, to be honest, because it was just muddling down. So yeah, I don't think there is a, you have to find your own right time. And like I say, for me, 18, not knowing what I want to do with my life, that was the wrong time. I didn't want to come out with stacks of debt and also go into a degree and not actually really want to know if that was the right degree for me. That I think that's tough. So at least when, how old was I? 38, I think. Going to uni at that time, at least I had a business idea that I wanted to pursue, but what I was there for really was to dig deeper and unpick the idea, like,
And you
because
are going to inspire so many people listening today who are going to, you will give them a kick to go, oh, I've been thinking about doing this. And they've just
And
not been brave enough.
I have to be transparent and say it was really hard.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
not going to say it was easy because it was not a walk in the park at all.
Nope.
I would go to uni. So I had my, both the children were actually in separate nurseries. So I had my youngest in the university nursery because they gave more flexibility in terms of timetables. And then my other one was in our local nursery. And so I'd go in, do a lecture, pick the baby up, come home, look after the baby. And then I put both of the children down in the evening, and then I would study in the evening. And I would study until baby needed his night feed. Then I would, so I'd, that would be my cut-off time. for studying, feed the baby, put him back down, and then my toddler was usually up between 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And that's just how I rolled. And I roll like that because I had a thirst. I had this or a hunger. I wanted to be there. I wanted to be at university. I wanted to learn as much as possible. I was the student that would sit there and engage in everything that the lecturers had to say. I asked the stupid questions because I felt that I was in the safe space to ask the stupid questions, because I think a lot of 18-year-olds are quite afraid. They don't want to look silly. So I would ask the questions. I didn't mind looking silly at 38. I thought, if I can't ask now, when can I ask, the questions? So it was tough. It was really tough. And
How long
people,
was how long was it?
3 years.
3 years. So you did
Yeah,
a
3 years
three-year
solid. Yeah.
degree. Imagine if you put yourself in today and you hadn't made that decision, what you'd be doing now.
I don't know if I would have set the business up, because I don't think I had the confidence to set the business up, to take the plunge, because of the amount of money that I had would have had to invest in the business, which I am doing. You've got to go into that thinking, with conviction. And through uni, that's what I want. I wanted to put it through the mill, essentially. I want to test it out and really understand what sustainability meant in a broader space, not just in the travel industry as well. And so I probably perhaps would have carried on working, gone back to work, and maybe just sat on that niggle thinking, oh, I don't know if I could do it,
It would
if
still be
I'm
taking up
honest.
a lot of your energy thinking, oh, should I go to uni?
Yeah.
Should I go to uni? Should I go to uni? And
Yeah.
I think the other thing is, you're now at the age you are, and you've got a degree behind you, whereas you'd be still at the age you are. People think that time doesn't pass when you don't do stuff, but it still passes. So you're at the age you are, but you've got a degree.
Yeah.
You'd still be
Yeah.
at this age, but you
And
wouldn't have the degree.
totally. And I apply the learning from the degree in so many different ways, different frameworks that and different theories. They still, it's not just in work, it's kind of my mindset as well. I approach things differently. So the degree would have helped, even if I'd stayed to be employed. The degree would have probably helped with, because I had got to a point in, some people didn't mind not having a degree, but another, if you want to work for some of the big brands, you get to a ceiling point, really, where if you're not always ticking a box of having a degree, you might not get any further, which is a real shame, actually. But yeah, I think, like you say, at the age, so what if I was 38, at least. In a time that a lot of people weren't doing very much at all, at least I got my head down and studied,
Yeah, no, I think it's
and
awesome.
built that confidence that I was lacking. I'm proud of that. I'm proud. I mean, I worked so hard. I got first in every module that I did. And that was interesting, because I went into the degree thinking, if I come out with a 2-1, I'll be so happy, because of the children, and just thinking 2-1 would be amazing. But for every module to get a first, you can imagine what getting my first, I cried, because I thought, I didn't think this was possible for me to do. So that helped me then, just kept pushing me on for the next one, and so on and so forth, really.
I think it's really amazing. And I think what it also highlights is a lot of people, there's a lot of talk out there about how our neuroplasticity, our brains are more sponge-like when we're kids. And when we're kids, we learn everything easily. And then as we get older, it gets harder and harder. And sometimes that's just about passion. And sometimes it's just about, well, actually, I'm in the right mindset, as you said, to do this now.
It is a mindset.
In a way that I couldn't when I was 18, whatever, however many more brain cells I had when I was 18, however many more, neurons I had. Now I'm older, but I've got this mindset.
Yeah, and I think about that mindset quite a lot. So thinking back to my days of being at college, I found the mindset. I had that aha moments, you know. I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. I'm enjoying this. Oh, it's great learning journey. And certainly when I was at Carrie, I was like, oh, wow, this is how the other half live. And this is out there, the world for the first time. You know, wow, it's amazing. And then yeah, going to uni and having a lot of aha moments. Working, like I say, working for brands that cared, as like instead of it just being about a numbers game, that all of these different aha moments that changed my mindset, and really once you've got those, I was on board, I was away, and you can apply yourself in a different manner. But yeah, it is a mindset shift for sure.
One of the things I wanted to ask, when you were traveling on your own, around all these countries, what was the most dramatic moment?
Dramatic.
Did you have any kind of full-on dramas, or was it quite plain sailing, or did stuff happen? Like, I can imagine as a lone woman traveling, there would be some concerns, some worries. Like, were there any moments that sort of felt, oh, what's happening here?
That we had a few run-ins. So I found trusting the people wherever you were, that helped. And I noticed quite quickly as a backpacker, you put a lot of trust in people very quickly. So if you're staying in a hostel, you found this is your new set of people that you're hanging around with. So you kind of have to put a degree of trust in those people. And actually you found yourself meeting up with those people later on. It might be that you'd gone off somewhere else and then you met up with them, like maybe bumped into them 3 weeks later somewhere. So you do put a lot of trust in people, and trust into the locals as well. So I guess we did find ourselves sometimes trusting to stay in local accommodation that didn't feel very safe. And that was quite worrying. So as a couple of girls, when you don't feel safe, you get out as quickly as you possibly can. So I had a couple of those hairy moments, if you like, where I was always into trusting the locals. And most of the time, actually, they gave me the best experience. Like it was an overwhelming experience that I had, with locals. We went on holidays with locals on their holidays. I did some volunteering where you can help to teach English, and in return you get an experience of doing different things. So most of my experiences were positive, but I guess there were a couple of hairy moments where, as a pair of females, I probably would have felt different if I'd had perhaps had a male partner with me. But yeah, as a couple of females, putting some trust into people that found ourselves in uncomfortable and insecure accommodation. And if you can't sleep well at night, then it's you've got to get out. We didn't sleep all night, so you'd get your backpack on before the sun come up, and off you'd go, and get out of that environment as quickly as you possibly could. So I did that. There was definitely a couple of those, and then when I was on my own in South America, again, I put a lot. We stayed in more hostels in South America. I stayed in more hostels in South America, and most of the time it was fantastic experiences. But certain times where got things pickpocketed, for example, and I know another girl was in the park in Buenos Aires, and she got robbed at knife point, sat in the park. So there were some hairy times, but to be honest, there was very few of them in the bigger positive experience of traveling.
So, what would you recommend to a young person that wants to travel? And also, what would you say to their parents who are sat freaking out?
Well, I was a little bit older when I went traveling, so I was 26,
Still
and I
comes under
think
the young pe person bracket for me.
my parents were terrified. Funny enough, my mum, she was so maternal that when I left, I was her only child, and they started fostering. My parents started fostering because they missed looking after me, essentially, or looking after someone. And they fostered for many years until they retired.
How awesome.
When I left home. I mean, my advice would be that everyone should do it. Because you learn about yourself and you find yourself, you have to put yourself out there to enjoy those experiences. Otherwise, you just sit terrified in a room all the time and not really engage, with the locals. So I would recommend that everyone does it. But the time when I was traveling was still very different. I remember we were still going into internet cafes to make reservations, to email home. We didn't, obviously phones did exist then. I think it was at the time when the first iPhone had just come out. We didn't have one because we were traveling and going through various countries. I know that it was in the days where having a mobile phone abroad was astronomically expensive, so you just didn't do it. So it was only when I got to Australia that I actually got a SIM card and a local SIM card. But other than that, it was still very much internet cafe, meeting up with people. And I think having a plan and saying where you're going to be and following that through. I always told family what my rough plan was going to be, or if I knew I was going to an area that didn't have any internet cafe or anything like that, I would say, you're probably not going to hear from me for 5 days or something until I'm back online, essentially. But I would recommend it was an eye-opener for me. Like I say, even though I traveled all around the world, I'd had my hand held with all of those experiences, and now I was doing it all by myself. So I definitely put my big girl pants on, to go traveling. And I just loved it. I built my confidence again, to have done that and being alone for a lot of it. And then coming back to UK does help you to be able to have conversations, start up conversations with people that you never would have perhaps done before, because you kind of had to. Otherwise, it would have been quite a lonely experience.
I always think of my own mum, who she was brought up in the Rockies in Canada. And in 1965, she was 18, she decided she was going to go traveling. And she left her little town in the Rocky Mountains in Canada and left. Like, she went traveling around the world and she ended up in the UK. And I often think of my grandparents and how that must have felt back then with no phones, no email, no easy way to even really get even pay phones and stuff.
Getting a letter would have taken a long time to get back.
And I just think that it's really amazing, like the technology we've got now. If our kids do go away, yeah, okay, it's not like my daughter went on her first holiday to Cyprus in July. Literally 3 days after she turned 18. And I was a bit, oh, but she phoned me every day. So when you can see them on a video phone, it's not quite the same.
That's right. And that's why more than ever that we should travel, I think, now, because we're more connected than we've ever been. And whilst, don't get me wrong, I enjoy a disconnect. I really do. You can now travel and stay connected. So I think parents have to let the children go at 18. It's up to them to start making their own decisions. I guess we all mature at different ages, so that's something I guess to consider. But I would encourage all parents
Did you see the
let them
thing
out for the
about
nest.
Kirsty Allsopp, who got into massive trouble because her 15-year-old went Euro training or whatever it was, whatever you call it.
Oh,
So
no.
she sent her 15-year-old off with his 16-year-old friend, and they went traveling around Europe on the train. And she was in big trouble with social services for letting her 15-year-old go. And she was just like, well, I trust him. I know he's well traveled. I know he's sensible, and I know that he'll be absolutely fine. But yeah, she had quite a lot of stick from that in the press.
I think 15 is probably quite young, isn't it? I mean, each to their own, and I know, she needs her own boy, so no judgment there. But in the same way, I think it's a bit, I got up to all sorts as a child, and that my parents didn't, and don't get me wrong, I wasn't a really naughty girl or anything like that, but I still got up to things that my parents didn't know about. So I think maybe being a bit older, you end up having to take that response. You have to take your own responsibility, I think.
Yeah, and I remember I used to get put on a flight from Canada to the UK and back again and vice versa. And we would never allow them to put those things around our neck and tell the hostesses that we were, I was 14. And so me and my brother were traveling from Vancouver to the UK on flights on our own at 14 years old. And yes, you're in an enclosed space, but there was once where there was a big snowstorm and we had to land in Calgary. So we were offloaded in Calgary and were sat there as teenagers, essentially, in Calgary.
Like,
And
what's
then
going on?
we
Not
got the
knowing.
next flight and things. But I just think sometimes we get a little bit too precious with what our kids can and are capable of and aren't capable of. And my friend's husband back in the day used to get on a train in the morning because he loved trains and he'd get off in the evening and his mum would be like, "Oh, where have you been today?" And he'd traveled the whole country.
Just riding
Just sat
around
on
the
the train
country.
all day. And I know the world is different, but also we have much more communication with our kids. Like we've got Find My Phone, so we know exactly where our kids are. And we didn't do that back in the day.
So
So
it
if you're
matters.
a parent and you've got a teenager going off on those travels or a young adult, go and foster some other kids to distract yourself. Now that's the moral of that story.
I really chuffed that my parents did that. They gave so many other children such great childhood experiences that they would never have had before. So whilst they lost me for a few years, well, I never went home, obviously, after that. I moved across the country, but for them, I think this is great. So something great came out of it for them too.
Yeah, and for loads of kids. Let's go back to your business. You've set up a platform and it sort of focuses on working with hotels and brands. And one of the one brands you do work with is Six Senses. Now, I learned about this recently when I was talking to a client of ours, and they've been on the hotel program.
Oh
Judge, watch
yes,
this.
they were.
So it's a
God,
really interesting
Life on the
concept.
Lobby, that one.
Yes.
Life on the yes, yeah. The Ibiza property was on there. There's probably been a couple of others as well in the
Yeah. So
past.
how did you get into that? How does your platform work? What is different about it?
Yes, so as I was saying before, all of my frustrations with the bar being so low when it comes to sustainability, I would always kind of question the status quo. I guess what does it mean to be sustainable? And is it possible for hotels to be genuinely sustainable? I mean, there's talk about are hotels regenerative, and some hotels perhaps would claim to be regenerative, but that's another end of the spectrum altogether. And also, I'd question the certifications that were out there, because there's a lot of self-certifications out there which are not worth the paper that they're written on. I wouldn't trust them at all. But I think, as a consumer myself, not everything is kind of black and white. I think, for example, like fair trade. Don't quote me on this, but I think it's about 40% of your produce has to be fair trade in order to receive the certification. It's not 100% of the produce. So certifications, they have their place, but they don't offer complete transparency. So what I wanted to do on my platform was deliver that transparency. It was to go through those impact reports that I seen, like, for example, like Ambient, and pull through all of the great work that the hotel is genuinely doing to make an effort. So a lot of hotels come to me and say, oh, we're sustainable. But actually what they have a sustainable policy in place, but that doesn't make them sustainable. Because when I ask about the work that show me, demonstrate to me what you've already done, that's harder. They can't add metrics. And usually when you find hotels that are genuinely trying to make a difference, they have metrics in place. They have KPIs to, that they're working towards that help them to become accountable for what it is that they're trying to do. So what I'm trying to do on my platform is tell a story essentially as to why that hotel deserves to be on the platform. It's not just to deliver a certification, because there's some nice certifications in travel out there, but they only take the hotelier so far. They help the hotelier with frameworks essentially and to become accountable and take responsibility for what it is that they're doing. But it doesn't take them all the way through, if you like, to being sustainable. And so I decided when I was at university actually to use the framework of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. There's 17 goals. They cover all topics, you know, poverty, life below water, life on land, diversity, equality. There's so much that is covered in those 17 goals. That I thought actually that's a quite a nice framework to be able to tell a story through. So I work with the hotel. It takes me a long time to work with the hotel in terms of getting extracting the right information from them. And I tell their story through the framework of those goals. So it's very different to ticking boxes. That's what I was trying to move away from, is sick of seeing the green leaves and sick of the ticks and thinking, actually, let's tell a bit more, let's give the hotel the kudos that it deserves, and tell the potential guest the truth of what they're doing and what makes them different. And it's quite interesting working in the luxury space because a lot of people say, oh, you know, luxury can't be sustainable and travel can't be sustainable. But actually, I think luxury space, more than ever, should be leading the way. They should be taking responsibility. They have the money behind them to make these considered choices. They can
Because actually, it's
afford.
more expensive a
Yes.
lot of the time to be sustainable and to do all those things. So it's the people
Yes.
with the
Yeah. I
money that
mean,
can actually afford to do them.
well, we know that ourselves, don't we, in terms of our own investments into EVs or solar or whatever it is that we want to invest in for the greater good, essentially. It's an investment that you've got to kind of put in up front in order to get the return. And you don't always necessarily get the return. So I'm trying to find the owners and the general managers that are already in that mindset of making a difference, that is more to a guest experience than, you know, the duvets and you know the staff, you know, wonderful staff that they have, the excellent staff. There's more to it, and I think that story is that is in the sustainable impact that they're making.
Do you do
So
like the flights and everything as well? Is it the whole travel package or is
I
it just
don't do
hotel?
flights, no. It's an accommodation booking service. And the reason why I chose to go online with it rather than the calls per se is because I think there are more people like me out there that don't that aren't able to book in office hours, essentially, but they want to find some trust in what it is that they're booking. So by into the technology has been quite challenging to integrate. It's not that straightforward because everyone works on different platforms. So you're trying to bring that all together. So that's been a big eye-opener for me. I've learned a lot on the tech side because I like the idea of if someone wants to book at 5 a.m. in the morning. They can just book it. It's done. Because we know that people travel for business and then they want to extend their stays, for leisure, or they don't have to live in the UK. So they're not going to necessarily need the flights from the UK, or they've got air miles, or the same with relatives, or whatever it might be. So I decided not to go down the airline route and just focus on the accommodation and experiences as well. So yeah, if someone wants to book at silly o'clock, wherever they are in the world, they can, and they get that instant gratification through it's booked, it's sorted, but then I follow up with them. So I do the bits that I would have liked my husband to have done. Would you like to book into the spa? Would you like to book into the Michelin starred restaurant? Do you need transfers? Where are you coming from? Are you the train, the plane, or relatives, or whatever it might be, from the office? The children's clubs or dietary requests. If you're going to a private island, they need to know in advance what it is that what your needs are. So it's fulfilling that. So at least that traveller knows and feels reassured that when they get there, that everything is in hand for them.
There's quite a lot of franchised travel agents out there these days. There's one
There
in
are.
every networking group I've ever been to. I won't mention names. So what made you decide to do what you do? Or what, how is it different? I don't even know what the question is, but what's different about it? Because there'll be a lot of people listening that'll say, oh, well, I can just go to XYZ who will do all these other things.
Yeah, they can. I mean, so the franchise model, obviously, they take a certain percentage of your commission. To do that, but that tends to be a manual experience where you're phoning up the travel agent or you're sending through an email and you want that booked. But I tend to find my customers, they're really busy and they just want to get something booked. So that's where the technologies is coming in,
I
of being
agree because I
online.
have tried using those other means and just found it so annoying. And nothing against it at all. I think it works for lots of people and it's
Yes, it
brilliant for
does.
lots of people. But for me, it just wasn't right because I kept going, yeah, but I want to see that hotel's website, or I want to see that thing, or I just want to sit and go through it all instead of having to be on the phone all the time. So I really didn't want that kind of way of doing it. So I can definitely see that what you offer would be something that would be more in line with what I had the way I am.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like also Jenny sat in a classroom with Gen Zs for 3 years was an eye-opener. It's worth the degree in itself. That was like another degree. But they don't speak on the phone.
No,
They're
I
on
know.
WhatsApp. They're on message. They do everything online. So if we want a future-proof business, let's look at what this next generation are needing from us and how we can help them come through. So that's where my thinking was. It's not everyone, don't get me wrong, travel agents that I have a lot of friends that are travel agents and they are fantastic. And if you can get a personal travel advisor that knows what they're doing, then amazing. But I just feel that the way that the way that we're evolving, everything is fast-paced, and we do kind of look for that instant gratification. Like I say, we don't always have the time to speak to people. We want to book something online. So I'm offering this kind of hybrid service. You're still getting looked after, but you book it on a platform that is just of trusted, like by being as transparent as I possibly can be through written, through writing it down on the website. I think it offers a level of transparency and trust that is not always visible, certainly in brochures and other websites, essentially. So it is a bit different than booking with manually, if you like.
There will be a lot of people listening who will be thinking, well, I can't afford any of this. And that's true. There will be lots of people who can't afford it. So what sort of people Like, what's the price bracket starting at for your sort of service?
Yes, and the beauty is with my platform is I can constantly keep adding to it, which is what I am doing, finding new hotels. It takes me a long time to get them on there, but essentially you get going and you've got a line of them coming through, which is wonderful. But the luxury is different. It's not always about the price tag. Obviously, you will pay more for some form of luxury experience, but my hotels actually start. I have a great hotel called the Chedi in Montenegro, and their rates start really reasonable, I think. Anyway, I think it's about 275 a night, and you're getting a fantastic experience with that. Because the destination can often determine the pricing. So to go to a destination like Montenegro, which is not somewhere that everyone is flying to, although it's been on the map now for about 20 years in terms of one that people are wanting to get to. But I think 275 per night is an affordable
Luxury, yeah, it's an affordable luxury.
In the luxury, space. But I know myself, you can go to London now and you can pay 200 quid for a Premier Inn.
Oh, easy.
And see, it's crazy. But at least when you're booking on the platform, you are getting that whole package experience, with it, that aftercare that people wanting, that concierge experience. And and from there, obviously prices go up. But yeah, it's important to, like I say, is luxury is different for everyone, that whatever their views are on that.
What's your favorite destination?
Oh.
The big question.
Yeah, I'd say favorite country is Thailand, favorite city Rio de Janeiro, perhaps. Yeah, I mean, India's up there as well. I'm not as much of a fan of Indian food, which is a challenge when you go to India. I struggle with coriander, cardamom. They're not my favorite herbs and spices. But in terms of the immersive experiences that you can have, it's just mind blowing. And I used to work for an Indian hotel group, so I used to go out there quarterly, essentially. But yeah, Thailand, I think I must have been, I mean, I spent 2 months there when I was backpacking, probably been there about a dozen times, possibly more. Love the people are so warm and so friendly. It's easy to get around. And funny enough, I was talking to my husband over Christmas about our own family holidays and what they look like now that the boys are getting a little bit bigger. I would like us to put on our own backpacks and travel around the country, for and have a deeper experience and travel around the country for the whole of the school holidays. And that's something that we're thinking of doing, because that's what I want to encourage, is instead of jet setting everywhere, is to start staying and traveling a bit deeper. So maybe, yes, you're going to there'll be emissions from your international flights, but if you can travel by land within that country, you're going to have a much more enriched experience while you're there. You're going to see so much more by taking trains, for example, and even local buses is quite good fun, to get around and having a completely different immersive experience than what you would just flying in and out and staying within, that resort, for example.
One of the places I've always wanted to go is Maldives. I love
Yes.
that kind of stilts on the in the middle of the sea.
Yeah.
So you've done that. What are your impressions of that as a holiday?
It depends on your personality, if I'm honest. Like the Maldives, it's picture postcard beautiful, stunning. But you are on essentially a tiny island, so you have to consider how quickly you get bored, because you're not really going to other islands to see how people live and immerse with other, you know, with the Maldivians on their inhabited islands, essentially. So you've got to think, is this right for me? Am I going to get bored there? Because diving is amazing. If you're into diving, it's phenomenal, but you don't have to dive. You can also snorkel. So as long as if you like being in the water, it's wonderful, but you are a captured audience. So you've got to consider, is there enough in on that island for me to do while I'm there? And you are going to pay for a premium to be in the Maldives. So you have to weigh up. I think I would suggest going to a couple of islands when you go to the Maldives. Don't just stay in one. Have a couple of different experiences. And that way you're mixing it up a bit. Of course, it depends who you're going with. If it's just like the two of you, for example, I
It
do
will
think
just be me and Matt.
So you've got to think. Some, depending on the size of that island, they might have one restaurant. So, are you comfortable to dine in the same restaurant every evening? I know they'll change the menu. Some will have several restaurants. So, for example, like Suniva Fushi, that's coming into our program. That's one of my favorite hotels in the world. And that is like being a kid again. I loved it there. It's everything is built sustainably. You no, don't wear shoes for the whole time that you're there. They take the shoes away from you. You don't have to pack any shoes. And you're getting around the island on little bicycles. There's lots of bunny rabbits everywhere. And they've done a great job at, whilst it's one island, of giving you all of these different experiences. They have zero waste on the island. So even things like the glass bottles that they're importing, they get crushed down, and they have artists that come in as, like glass blowers and can create beautiful pieces of art using the glass. And they get different, therapists, in guest therapists from around the world. So there's
Sounds
lots to do.
awesome.
Yeah, that is amazing. So I think that Maldives is amazing, but it isn't for everyone, even though it looks picture perfect. And it is beautiful, but if you need to do more than reading a few books, or if you're not really into, like a lot of people don't like swimming, for example, in the water, they prefer to be in the swimming pool. There are other islands perhaps that are a bit bigger that'll have a bit more, like for example, like Mauritius, has a bit
I
more going.
love Mauritius. So Mauritius currently is my favorite place, but we did go there and we stayed in the resort. We were there for about 8 or 9 days and we just swam and hung out and, you know, ate nice food and we didn't do a lot, but it was
Okay.
beautiful and I
Well, you'll
love
probably find
Mauritius.
Maldives is for you then. If that's how you experience holiday,
Well,
then.
we then, because me and Matt were saying all our holidays have been really like we've had New York, we've done Pompeii, we've done like they're all been really actiony, but that doesn't
Yes.
mean to say we need to do actiony all the time
All the
because
time.
you come home exhausted. So
Yes, you do.
sometimes I think we both feel it would be really beneficial to go somewhere where you can just sit and read that book that you don't read because you're on an active holiday. Like I always take a book on
Yes,
holiday and come back
and don't
having
read
not
it.
opened a page. Because
That's
we're up, you know, in towers and seeing stuff and
it.
doing things. So I think having those holidays where you can just take a few books, know you're going to read them, and just have that leisurely week because it forces you to, because otherwise you're off doing all this other crazy stuff.
You're right. Yes, yeah. I think if you can find tranquility in doing nothing, then and re just reading, and like you say, you are kind of forced into that situation. I'm exactly like you. Like, I always take a good book away, and I'm lucky if I get through the first chapter, because we're so busy, especially when you've got young children. It's quite difficult. But going somewhere like the Maldives, they do have great children's clubs as well. So even if not for yourself, but no need.
They're
But
not coming.
younger ones, they have fantastic children's clubs. And
Yeah.
I know some people say, oh, we want to be with the children when we're on holiday, not putting them into a children's club, but it's horses for courses. But yeah, if you want to do nothing then, and just look out and listen to the ocean lapping up against your villa, it's magical. It really is. And there's so many different islands out there as well, to choose from. So
Well, we
it's
just
about.
discovered Greece this year, and I just discovered Greece. Matt loves Greece, and he's been to lots of different Greek islands. But again, that was another revelation. I was like, oh yeah, I can definitely go Greece, island hopping in Greece.
Yeah, then I mean, we go to Greece quite a lot. We have a place in Greece, so that's on the mainland from Athens. So it's kind of you would go into Athens and then drive 3 hours around the coastline to where we are. But it's perfect for island hopping, because you're not that far actually from Athens. There's a lot of people that will, Athenians that will do day trips to like the Riviera or and around the Saronic Islands, and so there's a lot of ferries that you can hop onto. There's a little water taxi near us that gets us onto the island of Poros, and it costs us, I think it's a euro per person to get across. But yeah, so much to do, and oh, such a diverse group of of islands, depending on where you want to be. But also the mainland's got so much going for it, in terms of history and culture. So I think if you can get onto the mainland, it's definitely worth doing as well.
Well, we ended up, there was a family incident, which is on another podcast episode, but we flew to Skiathos, and which was beautiful, really liked Skiathos, but we ended up in Volos. Now, Volos is not somewhere I would have ever have thought of going or been in my conscious mind to go. It's the fifth biggest city in Greece, but it was amazing. We really loved it. Weren't supposed to be there.
Yeah, that's the beauty, I think, of having your explorer's hat on and wanting to get out and about and go to different places that you would never have gone to before. There's a lot of people that I speak to, and they go back to the same place every year. They'll go to maybe Maldives every year and Sicily every year, depending on the time of year, or Tenerife in the winter or something. And they just keep going back and back and back and think, wow, what a shame,
So many
maybe
places in the world, isn't
so
there?
many places in the world to see. Yeah, there's so much to do, and we just don't have enough time to do it in.
We have had a really great conversation. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to share with the listeners?
Sure, really. I mean, I know we spoke originally about perhaps setting up my own podcast. That's
Oh,
something that I would
yes.
like to
I think
do.
that you definitely need to be
So
doing that.
I would love your tips and advice, perhaps on doing that. Like for me, I would like to start talking about hotels in this different light, essentially, and talking about and championing the way that a hotel is doing things differently, and what that means, and asking the silly questions, like, because when it comes to sustainability, climate change, I think there's a lot of climate paralysis out there where people are just terrified. They don't know what to do, so they don't do anything. And I think if I can help to break down, what a hotel is doing and what that means and why that is different, in a good way, I think hopefully that will help
I would
people.
love to hear a podcast from you talking about the things we talked about today, so travel experiences, but also interviewing some of the people that run these hotels and hearing about these different experiences, because I just think that would be fascinating. And the only way to start a podcast is to start a podcast. That is literally the only way. I procrastinated for over a year. And then when I decided to do it, I had my first episode out within 4 weeks. So all it
Wow.
is what podcast platform are you going to use? What recording media are you going to use? And just start recording. And it can be really, we can paralyze ourselves. I did with going, oh, I've got to do one every week. That to start with, I was doing 2 a week. So
A
that
lot.
then wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
And then it Last year, I did half the number that I wanted to do, but I still did a good number. So it's about not sort of tying yourself down in knots about how many times you have to do it, what you should be doing. It's just, okay, so who's interesting to talk to? What have I got that's interesting to talk about? People will always find stuff interesting, and just go and do it. So we can have a chat about that,
Yeah, maybe
definitely.
some of your listeners, if they're interested in this conversation that they can have, that we've had, that they can tell me if they would like to hear as
Absolutely.
well.
So I'm going to put your details in the show notes for your platform, for you yourself,
Thank
and people can contact you and say, "Oh, I found that really interesting. I'd like to hear more about that." Because there will be loads of stuff has come out of today, and it's been a really brilliant episode. Every year I have a question. So this is my third yearly annual question. You're the first person to answer it. And
No
what happens to
pressure.
these questions is I know they get compiled at the end of the year and get put into one podcast episode of everybody's answers. So me and Matt were scrolling through various options I had yesterday, and this is the one we both decided on that would be a great question to ask. So, Kelly, if you could have one moment in your life to relive exactly as it happened, which would it be and why?
This is quite easy, if I'm honest, to answer. When I was started school at the age of four, I had a lovely best friend, and she passed away on Christmas Eve of cancer. And so she's front of mind for me at the moment of 38 years of friendship. So I would probably go back to Sarah had this amazing ability of lighting up a room, not in some kind of grand gesture way, but just being herself and making light of the mundane, essentially. So I would go back probably to being maybe about the age of 10, at my nana's caravan when she came on holiday with us, and just playing, running around the caravan park. Playing on tree swings, and I remember she got bitten by a dog that day. The dog wasn't intending to bite her. The dog wanted the stick from the tree swing and accidentally caught her leg, and we ended up having to go to hospital. I remember my parents being worried what they're going to say to her parents, like phoning her up, and but like a kind of typical childhood day like that with me and my best friend playing hide and seek as kiddies for me is so important. I've been thinking about all of my memories with her over this festive period, and I'll sorely miss her. But yeah, for me it would be a mundane family holiday with my bestie.
I am really sorry for your loss. That's really tough. And you have got so many happy memories with her, which is wonderful. And I never imagined in a million years that my first answer to that question would make me cry.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
Sorry.
no, there's no apologies for tears. We don't apologize for tears because, it's the thing in life, isn't it? That these
Life
things
is so
happen.
short. It's so life's so short, and we have to make the most of it. And she was good fun. She was a good girl, and always brightened up my day, and many others too. So,
And how precious to have a friend like that for 38 years. Lots of people never get that.
Yeah, I realised that how lucky we were, and we had that friendship, where we might not see each other because we didn't live anywhere near each other. We might not see each other for a couple of years, but it didn't matter. You kind of come every time you came together. It was like yesterday, and you're still communicating. Keep catching up. She had, bless her, she had young children too, but you just, I think, because you've got all of those years of friendship. There was never an uncomfortable time together. It was always happy, and joy. She was joy to be around and easy. That's the thing. I was myself. I was me. I always try to be me. But when you're with special people and it's comfortable and easy, that's the best kind of friendship, I think.
On that note, I am going to finish our podcast with a big thank you to you for being so generous in your sharing and for having the first podcast of 2025. And I'm going to wish the listeners a powerful day, whatever a powerful day means to them. And that might be thinking about that moment in their life that they could go back to, or it might be thinking about the luxury travel that they would like to do for their lives, or it might be the backpacking that they wish they'd done that maybe they can still do. All of those things. Just have a powerful day thinking about what is it makes you powerful.
Thanks, Jenny. I really enjoy speaking to you. Thank you. And thanks for having this first call of the year with me.
It's been really good. I've really loved it. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, everyone.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and information purposes. I hope you get a lot out of the podcast and from listening to it, but please do not use it as a replacement for a professional psychotherapist or GP. If you need some professional help, please go and seek that. Do not use this podcast as an alternative to that. If you need a coach, you know where I am. If you need a coach in a different area of your life that I don't support, then please go and find them. There are many great coaches out there. Make sure that they are accredited coaches with proper training.